Well, it's a great pleasure to be here, and you are all ambassadors, so it's a pleasure for me to address you as such, because unless you as ambassadors start convincing people in your communities and your wider circles that this is an issue, we're not going to move the needle beyond the 55%. And part of that is we don't have the evidence base to know in most cases what to do, but that's another opportunity for you. Let me just make sure I know which one it is. Is it this? Okay.
I'll just do this.
Okay, yeah. Thanks. I'm sorry to say I have no relationships to disclose, but I want to. Part of what I do is in our local community, which is a very diverse community, is try and convince people in the other sectors, particularly in the business sector and policymakers, that this is an issue. And I'm very concerned that one of the issues that doesn't get brought up enough is the crowding out of what we're spending on healthcare costs. That we are spending so much, it is crowding out the opportunity for investment in these other sectors that are the sectors that need investment if we're going to reduce disparities. Now, that does not suggest, it is a disgrace that there are still people that don't have health insurance, and the Affordable Care Act is making an important movement in that direction. But overall, we have to address this health care cost issue. Here is where we are if you look at the other developed countries, and you can see our health, our life expectancy should be a lot better than it is. It's down at the 77.5. We would expect to be at 81.4 if, in fact, spending more along this curve meant better health. So we are spending more and getting less. The value proposition is not where it needs to be. Locally, this is some of the data I show. This is health life expectancy at birth in years, and you can see that it has a lot to do with how much people are making. It is very strong, it is monotonic, and it is surprising to a lot of the people that I show this to. Here is data that is national, but it's also, we have the same kind of data locally. And once again, if you look at years of school completed, and this ties very much in with the indicator of social determinants that Dr. Koh talked about this morning, which is looking at educational attainment, at least at the high school level, and you can see once again here the years of school completed has a lot to do with longer life expectancy. So unless we can do something in this context, in this sector, we're going to have real difficulty closing the gap. And it also matters for the next generation. This is mother's education related to infant mortality. And once again, you see that those who have 16 or more years, that is college graduates in Yale, do a lot better in terms of infant mortality rates than those in all the other groups, but particularly those 0 to 11. When you look at the infant mortality rate, is roughly twice what it is for those that are college graduates. So if we're going to do like in Maryland, make progress, we have to make progress again in the educational attainment before, in fact, women have their children. We have increasing poverty rates. In Los Angeles County, 1 out of 4 children lives in poverty in a family below the federal poverty level. Once again, poverty is an economic and a health care poison, and we need to explain that. It's not just an issue of individual initiative or all these other things. It's an issue that's going to have a lot to do with our national productivity. Here's how we lag other developed nations in educational attainment. When I show this to people in business, they really get interested. So if you look here in science, look at our attainment. We're the darker ones. You can see we're down there quite low. If you look at reading and if you look at math, we're particularly low on the right-hand side there. So again, it's an issue of our economic competitiveness that we're not doing very well in our educational system. And the Gallup poll estimated that we lost $153 billion in productivity due to unhealthy workers. And that's more than 4 times the per capita cost in the United Kingdom. Once again, how are we going to be competitive? How are we going to be strong to put the money in and invest it if, in fact, we have these kind of problems? And we have terrible problems of health literacy. People with low functional health literacy, again, I talk about this to our leaders in politics, that they have poorer health status, they have greater number of medication errors, that their rates of utilization are much higher, and again, the estimate is that because of poor health literacy, we're spending $50 to $73 billion more than we would, and the average cost is $7,500 higher with annual health care costs for a person with limited health literacy. And we have the same, you can look at it, we have for heart disease, you can look at it for rates of cancer mortality, stroke, and all of these. So again, this is a problem of education, but also something we need to do broadly. And health literacy isn't just about health care. What we need is the intersectoral cooperation. And we can't simply be health imperialists. You know, when I talk about health, people say, well, is health the only important thing? No, it's not the only contributor to quality of life. We have to look at other sectors and say, what's a win for people in the transportation sector that also improves health? What's a win for people in the agricultural sector that also improves health? It can't be a zero-sum game, because we won't win that game. It has to be a win-win. And the National Prevention Council that the President, that the Congress and the President approved is, in fact, doing this, trying to look at the intersectoral at the national level. And what we need is better outcomes in all these other areas. So what's our role? Well, part of our role is collecting data. Part of it is demonstrating the trends locally so that the people who we talk about locally, when we meet with a Chamber of Commerce, a Kiwanis Club, a city council, a group of mayors, we have 88 cities in L.A. County, by the way. So when we talk to them, we want to talk about what are their trends locally. We want to help them prioritize and look at the data. And then we need the language for all the political perspectives, because some of the words we use resonate with the blue but not with the red. Some resonate with the red, not with the blue. We have to make sure that we use terms which have objective value that everybody understands in roughly the same way and doesn't, in fact, be a red flag. Here's data. This is really damning data from Los Angeles County. We divided the county into 128 zones, both cities and parts of cities, for the larger cities. And look at the left-hand side. This is the obesity prevalence in some of the places. Some of those places you may have heard of, because they're very tony areas, like Beverly Hills and Malibu and Rolling Hills Estates, and they have the lowest level of economic hardship. If you look at the next column, they're very low on the economic hardship list, and yet they have, and so they have an average income of about $100,000, and they have a 6.2% average obesity prevalence. These are 5th and 7th, 9th graders. That's what we have. That's what we've used, because we have good data on their BMI. Look at the right-hand side. These are places, most of which you've never heard of, many of which are just miles or even contiguous to the ones on the left. And look here. The average income, the average family income is $37,700. The rank of hardship is very, very high. But look at the obesity prevalence. It's 32.7. So the difference is fivefold, 500%. If people don't think place is important, then they have to look at this kind of data. That's one of our roles. And here is just another way to display that obesity and economic hardship go together. We see the coronary heart disease mortality. While it's going down, we still have these disparities. And by the way, for most indicators, Hispanics do better than non-Hispanic whites in Los Angeles County, as in many places around the country. So it's not just about minorities, although pretty soon in Los Angeles County, everybody other than Hispanics will be the new minorities. We have to provide this kind of data locally on built environment, on food security and injury and violence, on the major determinants of health, to get communities mobilized around these issues. An example would be our women's health program. They looked and found that people who have, and we have a lot of languages, over 125 languages, that multicultural, multilingual education advocacy campaign was absolutely essential. And they have operators that one can call and speak in these languages and provide for them. They can be screening for heart disease risk factors. They can be making sure they're getting mammography, testing for colon cancer, and the like. How do we get the best evidence? In many cases, we don't have clear evidence as to what's going to work. So that means we still have to act, but we have to evaluate what we do. Here's one of the programs we have, which is called the PLACE program, and this is trying to develop healthy, safe, and active environments where people live, work, learn, play, and age, and pray, if I listen to Howard Coase. We targeted the 11 low-income cities with high childhood obesity to try and increase physical activity. What are we doing? Okay, we are working with those communities to do complete streets, to do bike and pedestrian planning, enhancing safety at parks. Doesn't help to have them if, in fact, they're not well lighted. Healthy food procurement, and we're helping, in fact, these cities. We put out an RFP. We gave cities money to, in fact, do these things, and some of the things they're doing are safe routes to school, collecting resident input on land use issues and transportation plans, and we are now putting in health as an issue in the general plan. Think about this. It's so important. So if there's new developments in your area, they have to think about health. Right now, in most cities and most counties around the country, they don't have to think of health. It's not an essential part of a local plan. We are very fortunate to have gotten significant funding from the communities putting prevention to work, and these renew projects. We've been able to develop joint use policies, which means getting schools to let their facilities be used after hours so they can be available to the whole community, and improving the nutritional quality of food, and in teaching teachers how to do physical education. You wouldn't think they'd have to do that, but how to make sure that they're more physically active during that period of time. We are also developing local analogs to the National Prevention Council. That is absolutely critical. If you haven't read the National Prevention Strategy, please do it. It is a wonderful companion document to Healthy People 2020. Just a couple more examples. This is our trust program again, and this is under CPPW funding, and we basically got 75 agencies designated as pioneers because they work with the most vulnerable adults in terms of smoking rates, people with mental health problems, people with substance abuse, the LGBT community, etc. And they get technical assistance from us in trying to deal with it. But I didn't want to end without showing you a relative failure. We have, this was H1N1, and we have basically low demand and limited uptake of our vaccine, even though we were doing these large points of dispensing all around the county with particular attention to African-American areas. They are 9% of our population, but despite our efforts, they only got 3% of all the vaccine. And so we developed with a supervisor, one of the five supervisors that's in charge of L.A. County, a very targeted program. We targeted media efforts. We had agencies that worked particularly in that community. We had partners in all those areas. We used mobile clinics, community health centers, immunization coalitions, and all that, trying to provide many opportunities. And we did get a lot of extra people, but we only increased the proportion of African Americans from 3 to 3.5%, suggesting that we need to do more than focus on individual parts of the healthcare spectrum and the health spectrum. We need to think underlying issues. What is the underlying issue here that leads us to this kind of disappointing result despite spending very, very large amounts of resources on it? We have to be smarter. We have to think upstream, and that's absolutely critical. One way to do that is to use health impact assessment. How many of you here know about health impact assessment? Fantastic. Take a look. The National Research Council has just put out its report on health impact assessment. This is a way to look at the health impacts of decisions in other sectors, in transportation, education, in housing, in community development. Helps you to make the case that we can make differences together by intersectoral relationships. This is a place at UCLA you can look for information on health impact assessment, HIAguide.org. We have a summary of a lot of the health impact assessments around the country, many of which you can use for your local area. So what is public health? We know that this is a society which assures conditions for people to be healthy, but this is not a definition that resonates with people outside of public health. We need to be ambassadors to make sure that all you've heard today is not simply wasted by, in fact, talking to ourselves. That we need to make sure that health equity is seen as core public health, and that core public health is essential to economic vitality in each of our communities. Thank you.